This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Are you prepared for the zombie apocalypse? In case of emergency, break glass and tune in to Joy 94.9 on a Tuesday night for Sci-Fi and Screen.
Something wrong, sir? Something getting you down? Is it that you're the last human being alive with no life, no family, no future, no prospects, no hope? Is it something to do with that, sir?
Something to do with that, Crichton, yeah.
Mr. Lister gambled you in a poker game, sir, and I'm afraid to report he lost you.
We're all deeply sorry, bud. Apart from me and him and him.
This is Mitch from Sci-Fi and Scream, and we're just currently with Craig from Red Dwarf, who plays Dave Lister. And
hiya. How you doing? You all right?
Yeah, I'm great. Thank you.
You look a bit nervous.
A little bit. I'm a big fan. I was wondering, like, coming in to do the series again, was it a little bit hard to return to such a character that you haven't played for quite a few years? Like,
it was really easy, actually. I mean, the biggest fear that we had was that Red Dwarf got such a sort of strong legacy that we didn't want it to do it and it to be no good, you know. So it was really important that the scripts were right, and the fact that we wanted to do it like we did it back in the day in front of a live studio audience. So once the conditions were right, the scripts were right, we got the audience, and then we did that first episode, and as soon as we started doing all that stuff about the moose, it was like we just all looked at each other and went, we're back, you know. It was like, yeah, never been away. It was such a nice experience to make, because we're all a lot older and more mature, and I think that's reflected in the performances and the way we go about our business and that. So I've really enjoyed doing it. It was really good.
I think you did actually a really great job with the series, because I felt, you know, you were able to keep the new humour and keep it kind of have that old feel from the original series. And did you have any, like, reluctance to do a remake or, like, continue the series?
Not really reluctant. I just say just a lot of fears and about how good it was going to be and the quality of it. But as soon as the script started coming through from Doug Naylor, it was like, some of them were hilarious. You know, I thought Lemons was amazing when we go back in time and meet the wrong Jesus and things like that, you know. So, and Red Dwarf's always sort of quite cutting edge with its sort of conceptual humour, you know, and I think that's all really reflected in Red Dwarf 10. So, yeah, there was no reluctance, really, just a lot of fear.
Did you have any say in the script writing, like, now that you guys have all had a bit of experience?
Yeah, we kind of had a lot more say in the scripts. But, like, to be honest, I mean, when Doug writes a script, he's written it so tight. No lines are wasted, you know. It's feed, punchline, feed, punchline. It's relentlessly funny, and so you don't really have to change that much of it, you know.
I'm going to also just veer off Red Dwarf a little bit. I really loved Robot Wars. And I also really loved Takeshi's Castle.
Yeah.
Like, your commentary on Takeshi's Castle, it just makes it amazingly perfect. Because I watched, like, the American commentary, and I'm just like, no, it doesn't really work. Did you have, like, with the commentary for Takeshi's Castle, did you actually have a script?
Or was I could kind of... What we used to do was we'd go to the pub in the afternoon and we'd have about 4 or 5 pints, and then we'd go into the studio, stick the tape in, pick up the microphone, and then say what you see, sort of. And so there was no script, it's all spontaneous, and I can't believe they let me get away with some of the stuff I'm saying on it, you know. It's like it's really just near the mark, and but it's funny. I love doing it. We did 150 odd episodes of it, and only 3 people ever won.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's not no, right. And the captain is upset again.
And it's like, you know, it's sort of, I think they're great at that sort of ritual humiliation. The Japanese are really quite good at that sort of television, you know. So it was really good fun to make.
It's a little bit violent as well, you know, like they push the boundaries.
I know. I used to love where they just run at the door and bounce off about 30 feet, you know. It's like I hope they. I've never worked out what they actually won.
I think they won money. They won something. Because, I mean, it's a castle.
I thought they just got their teeth back. I don't know.
To me, with a broken rib and broken leg.
Yeah, I mean, that's. Yeah, stepping stones. Because they really do go at it. And you can see them banging into things and trying their best not to cry.
I love the costume episode. There's an episode where they're all in really weird costumes. Yeah, like, too good.
Fancy dress and stuff.
And just quickly, like, have you got any plans for the future? Like, anything, like, major?
Well, I'm doing a show called Coronation Street, which I've been doing for, like, the last 7 years. So I do Coronation Street Monday to Friday, and Saturdays I do my radio show on BBC Six Music. So there isn't much time. And then... once every couple of years they let me go off and do a new Red Dwarf, so I'm just kind of like happy, you know, ticking over doing what I'm doing, really, you know. I mean, I've got no unfulfilled ambitions or anything like that. No, I don't want to be Brad Pitt. So, you know, it's
working
with
Swatch.
Yeah.
Or that many babies.
Yeah, I know. I haven't got the time.
How does he still have his hair?
He looks fantastic. He does an advert in England at the moment, which has been absolutely slated. Like, he does an advert for some women's perfume.
Oh,
it's been absolutely slated.
That's Chanel.
Yeah,
that's how you get the ladies.
That's it. You know, you've got to smell good.
You've
got to smell good.
Thank you so much. I love you. I love everything.
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure. Nice to meet you.
Bye-bye.
My name's Craig Charles. This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
Crichton, you're forgetting about Space Tour Directive 1742.
1742? No member of the Corps should ever report for duty in a ginger toupee. Well, thank you for reminding me of that regulation, sir, but I can't see how it's pertinent to our present situation.
In which case, we can remove him from duty as per Space Corps Directive 196156.
196156. Any officer caught sniffing the saddle of the exercise bicycle in the women's gym will be discharged without trial? Sorry, sir, that doesn't quite get to the nub of the matter for me.
I invoke the All Nations Agreement, Article Number 39436175880932/B.
39436175880932/B? All nations attending the conference are only allocated one car parking space? Is that entirely relevant, sir? I mean, here we are in mortal danger, and you're worried about the Chinese delegates bringing two cars.
Crichton, will this work?
Lie mode. Of course it'll work, sir. No worries. Sir, is everything okay out there?
What's the delay?
A couple of sirens whacked each other out fighting over me brains. Oh, smack. It's the TV weather girl from Channel 27. It's not that easy, Crichton. You can't see what she's doing with her pointy stick.
I'm starting the engines.
Get back in here now!
On me way.
Connor! Stop! For God's sake, if you want a job doing properly, do it yourself.
It's Winnie the Pooh. What? Winnie the Pooh, I swear. He's refusing the blindfold. They're tying Winnie the Pooh to the stake. Quick, let's get out of here before they bring him back. All in all, 100% successful trip.
Sir, we lost Mr. Rimmer.
All in all, 100% successful trip.
You're back.
Afraid so.
Had the feeling you might be. Rubber shares went up this morning.
Christine Kachansky. You dated her once for 3 weeks before she discarded you for a catering officer.
She's beautiful.
It's your ambition, sir, somehow, someday, to win her back. And then lie on top of her and move up and down rapidly in that curious way that humans find so agreeable.
I was just doing a little test. A little test to see if you'd gone crazy.
Lister to Red Dwarf. The intruder seems to be blissfully unaware that we have a rather sturdy hollow whip in the munitions cabinet. And unless he wants his dead ear minced like burger meat, he better be history in 2 seconds flat.
Thanks to Enlightenment, recon mission complete. Transmit with speed. Enlightenment quickly, please.
But it is possible. Possible, but highly dangerous. These side effects can be devastating. You could be reduced to a gibbering simpleton.
Reduced?
I don't care. I'm prepared to take the chance.
Even if it costs you your mind.
It's a small price to pay.
They've been naughty boys, haven't they, Mr. Flibble?
Yes.
This is a ship, Mr. Rimmer, of superhumans.
I'm not a hologram.
I'm half human.
What the hell's happened to my teeth?
What time is it?
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. I'm Mitch, and I'm with Red Dwarf. Sorry, I don't know your real name.
It's Robert Lewitt.
Robert Lewitt. And he plays Crichton on Red Dwarf. And hello, like...
Hello, my name's Robert Llewellyn, just in case you didn't catch it. You know, I'm just saying. That's all. I'm not bitter.
It's the braces.
They're very good. They're very, very fetching.
I actually Red Dwarf when I was growing up.
So I shall pretend to be in the middle here, and somehow I will. Do you want to?
I find that really funny because, like, I'm not the oldest. Like, she's older than me. So I was like, I thought you'd know. I thought you'd.
No, well, look. In the 90s, something happened to me, and that was giving up my television rights. You know, giving up.
Did you?
I didn't have TV for ages. I thought it was a political stand, and I missed out. I missed out on Red Dwarf.
Why though? Why did you go?
No, in the 70s, I didn't watch television. So there's all these classic sort of 70s comedy shows. I never saw.
Really?
Oh, you've got to didn't you love da 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 da? And I don't know. What it is, you know.
So, what did you miss?
I don't even know what I missed. No, I truly don't know. I mean, I guess like Only Fools and Horses, and I never saw that really. And Porridge, I don't think I really ever saw Porridge. Well, they're back in the olden days when everything was black and white.
It was all cranked mechanisms.
You had to wind your telly up to watch it.
Incidentally, sir, why were you outside with a jetpack?
Let me finish. As I was saying,
sir, where is Starbuck?
Let me finish. As I was saying, we were sat round the...
Sir, you lost Starbuck in a card game?
Well, you've spoiled the end now. Don't look at me like that. There is an upside.
An upside? How can there be an upside? What's the upside?
I lost Rimmer too.
One of my main questions is, like, how was it coming back to a series that you haven't done for quite a few years and then trying to keep up the new humour? Because I found the series was done so well with, like, a kind of new... feel, yeah. But it was kind of fresh as well with the same feel. Like, how was it for you going back to
It was peculiarly familiar. That was what was the most bizarre. So it's 14 years. There was a 14-year gap. Mm. And you'd think that, we basically turned into a bunch of fat old middle-aged gits, you know. But there was something that happened. I don't know how you could do it, but when we were all standing on the set in costume... We all said, this is weird. It's like we've had a weekend off. You know, it's like we're maybe a 2-week summer holiday and we're back at work. And it was just completely normal. And even the little in jokes were exactly the same from dating from the mid 90s. And even I think within 20 minutes of starting filming, Craig Charles has set fire to my script, which he's been doing every time we've been on the set for the last 24 years, you know. So it was brilliant fun. I think also that we've always got on really well, but there were some... We've definitely kind of matured to a point where we've all had kids and we've all been through loads of stuff and, you know, all that stuff. And now we've reached a point where basically we're just really good old friends that get on really well, that want the whole thing to work rather than... There was a point when it was... I mean, I must admit, never for me, because I was just the one in rubber. But, you know, there was people, I want that joke and I want that gag, and now we don't give a toss, you know. We want the whole thing to work, and that's all that matters, and nobody cares about who's doing more or what we look like, because we kind of... You've got to get over that. Once you're past a certain age, you won't know this for many years, but you just go, oh, what's the point? You know, I can't be asked.
It's time travel as well.
It is time travel, exactly.
Is it 3 million years in the future or something?
Yeah, and we don't know the way home. And a few people commented that Crichton looked like he'd downloaded a few extra apps over the years.
Oh, really?
I didn't filled out a bit, yeah. Well, you're very sweet not to notice. There's one or two shots where Crichton looks like he's probably, he's got a few extra hard drives inserted.
What pictures? Like, who says that?
I know! So cruel.
I think there should have been more episodes. Like, I found, like, six just wasn't enough. Was that just kind of like a safety net, do you think?
I mean, it was a thing that, I think it's all to do with budgets and things like that. I mean, the TV industry, and since that's the other thing that really changed, is that when we last did the series of Red Dwarf in the UK, there were effectively, I think, then five channels that everyone had five channels, and a few people who are really trendy and had satellite dishes had hundreds. Now everyone's got hundreds of channels. I mean, you know, and so the way that television works has changed so dramatically. So when I first started working in television in the UK, there were three channels. This was years. This is in the olden days when everything was black and white and all men wore.
So it was just Doctor Who.
It was Doctor Who on one side and Red Dwarf on the other, and Des O'Connor singing badly on the third. You know, so that was it. There wasn't it. So that meant you got these huge audiences because there was nothing else to watch. There was no internet. There was no anything else. And now it's spread so much. So therefore, the budgets for any one show have gone down considerably, you know, so it's much harder to make. So I think that's the reason they do six, because it's such a risk to put that much money into something. Is this going to work? And now I think, well, if we do more, which I hope we will, we don't know yet, you know, that they might make more.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is actually. Thank you, Mr. Charles. God, he's so rude.
What's happening with you?
Well, I've been running some tests on the crystals. A byproduct of the rod's ability to transport its host vessel seems to be a curious power of synchronicity.
That's strange. Before I was napping, and I had a dream you were doing something crazy with crystals.
What a weird coincidence.
Hey, we both said that at the same time. And that. What's going on? Why are we saying everything together?
Probably just coincidence.
I guess it helps that it has got this really strong cult following from what I've seen online. You know, it's got a very strong following. So maybe if you do another six in a year or two's time, just to build on it.
Well, I think that's what will happen. I think it's not going to, because, you know, when we finished the last one, everybody went, oh, you've got to make more. And then it's already a year since we did the you know, we were doing them a year ago now. Yeah. And I think it might be another year before we start again, you know. But I think, I reckon, I'm confident that we'll make more. I don't know if I can cope with the rubber and putting up with Craig. I mean, that's quite, you know, that's a tough call.
Has he ever tried to set fire to the rubber?
I mean, I don't think he has. No, I can't remember him actually setting fire to my actual head.
Yeah.
But I bet he's thought about it.
Yeah. He held out to ask about the electric car. What does that mean?
About the electric car, Rob.
Yeah, what's the electric car?
Let me bore you senseless with my electric vehicle knowledge. I drive an electric car. So I do a series in the UK about renewable energy and electric vehicles and
all
those sort
of things.
Yeah, exactly. See,
it's like Bill Oddie does something like that.
Oh, I don't know if Bill Oddie does electric. Does he got an electric car?
No, birds. Sorry, bird.
I think he does birds. Yeah.
Which is basically, he picks people up.
Is it like the Stig?
Took him to work.
Takes them to work.
Yeah. Is it like the Stig? Is it like the Stig, though?
I don't drive quite as fast as the Stig. I had a drive with the Stig recently, and he drove really, really slowly. He was really nice.
He probably has to.
I'd be so happy if either of you just came and picked me up for work.
Oh, my God.
That's the reaction we're looking for. An electric car, I mean. Yeah, electric car.
I watched that the other day. It was quite funny at the end, but I say, were people still pretty much their shit?
Yes.
Sorry, yeah. So
I'll leave it that one.
Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Just veering off Red Dwarf a little bit, you went a lot into publishing, quite a lot of books.
Yeah.
Like, I think you even went off shopping for a while. Like, one of your books.
Yeah, that was a bit weird. Yeah, like, I did a year. Well, it was odd. I mean, it wasn't meant to be a book. The book thing was very much foisted on me. But I just did it. I was in Australia and we did Christmas shopping with my extended family here. My wife's Australian and my kids are Australian. Yeah. And I got really miserable because of that kind of, the very kind of crass, commercialised thing, you know, that you've got to buy presents and you've got to, and all that stuff. And I don't know, I was being miserable middle class kid.
I'm with you on that, because I think it is a little, you know, this obligation present as well that you have to buy, and you're just like.
So I just made a decision when I was walking along the beach, which isn't a bad place to make a decision. I couldn't sort of impose it on my wife and children and my family, but I could do it to me. So I just said I won't buy anything for me other than food and medicine for a year and see what happens. And that was really a little private decision. And then it became a curse. Because once you'd started it, you go, I haven't got any socks. Oh, I've got to darn them. So I learned all these things again that my mum had taught me, my granny had taught me how to darn socks, patch my trousers. So I didn't buy anything at all.
Oh, really?
So I didn't. So if you think food and medicine, that's you think that's all. But actually, after 9 months, most people would probably have. I would have bought a hard drive for my computer or a little wire or a new phone. Nothing. I didn't do anything. And it was no newspapers, no books, no magazines. So then you start to become creative and you start to revisit things like... you go to libraries. You go to the library and you read the newspaper there and you start reading books in libraries, which I hadn't used before. And I went, God, this is... So a lot of new habits came out, which I now stick with. And I go to the library quite often. And, you know, that... And it was actually... It kind of opened a little door in my kind of...
otherwise sort of regimented technical life where I buy new computers and buy, and then you just go, I don't, yep. And then you realise you don't need it actually.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I mean, it was a silly experiment really, but it definitely changed. It was long enough to change my attitudes to the way I'd been living up to then, which was very lazy and consumerist, yeah. Like we all are. I mean, there's not, and it's not to kind of make people feel guilty about it, but it was kind of to remind me that you can survive without all that stuff.
Did you publish this, obviously?
Yeah, it was published. Okay. It was called a book called Sold Out, which was kind of not... It was a difficult one, because when they said, would you write a book about it, I said, well, look, the whole point is nothing happened. You know, day one, woke up, didn't buy anything. That was it. That was it. And so it was quite a difficult thing to then come up with. But what it did was sort of bring up all those issues about consumerism and, you know, why products are made like they are, and can we not have a thing, you know, things like iPads and those, they're amazing. I think they're brilliant, but I want them to last, you know, and I think that is what's beginning to happen, is that because they can update, then the actual hardware thing stays the same, but it gets cooler because it does more things, and it's that, and you know, we should have an iPad for 20 years, you know,
not last maybe a year,
and then they bring out a new one, and you go, well, sod the new one, I've got the old one, and it's perfectly all right, and there's nothing, and I'm not going to get a new one, you know, so it's that, and how you, and that, which is also weirdly tied in with electric cars, because the one thing that, well, electric cars last a hell of a long time. The thing that makes electric car go along will last a million miles without any trouble, an electric motor, which is a completely different attitude. So then how do you do the other bits? You know, can you replace bits to keep it going? And you know, so we make less cars, which we use less, and they use less fuel, you know, and then let's try and work out how we can live in a sustainable way rather than rushing towards a cliff as fast as we can.
Well, I think sustainability is a really important part of, like, just, like, learning economy and things like this. Yeah. Like, so, and obviously this is how you've kind of branched into more sustainability, or...
Yeah, I mean, it's what sort of inspired that interest, and it was a combination for me. It wasn't sort of so much about being green or being organic, and all, which I sort of try and do anyway, but in a fairly lazy middle-class way. But it was also about seeing the technology, how the technology is developing that makes those things possible. You know, that we have to kind of change the technology we use, which doesn't mean we all have to walk around in handmade sandals, although there's nothing wrong with that.
Sackcloth dresses.
I love a lovely sackcloth frock, you know, floor length. Can look fabulous. But it's more to do with sort of, you know, there's new materials and technologies developing that make the kind of... the aspects of our lives much more plausible, that doesn't screw everything up
and doesn't cost as much energy as well. Like, I saw a great prefabricated building, and for cooling agents, or for like to bring the temperature down inside the building, they actually had this amazing grid pattern, like a mesh kind of thing, in a wall, and it was they were strawberries, little strawberries, like 1,000 strawberry plants, and you could feel the temperature drop when you walked past it. It was
but the Ferrari factory, you know, if you think Ferrari cars, not exactly the most sustainable and ecologically aware vehicles
look
in the world.
Those tires.
The way they make those cars is extraordinary, because that's in a huge factory with no air conditioning. In Italy, it gets really hot. And that is, it's basically, they make them in a jungle. So the whole place is hugely covered in plants, which are watered with little bits of water that they catch from rainwater. I mean, it's the most eco-sustainable factory in the world. And they make bloody Ferraris.
And the tyres last about 200 metres, and then they throw them away. Like rubber. It's almost sci-fi, almost Philip K. Dick.
That is a little bit sci-fi. Like,
do you want to wrap up a question?
Sorry, the only question that came to my mind was, like, your wife would have been so happy with the no shopping, but you could save so much money. But I was like, damn, my other questions are gone.
Any red dwarf ones? Any chance? Or
maybe just like with the makeup, I guess. Like, how was it getting back in the chair with the makeup?
That's the least fun part of an otherwise amazing opportunity. You know, to get a job like Red Dwarf is an amazing opportunity, but it's got a curse. The job comes with a curse, sir. You're going to be covered.
Voice well. Your voice is so different in your life.
You're going to, you know, you're going to have to come with it. You're going to put up with that. So that hasn't got any. I wish I could say it got easier. I try not to moan about it, but it's not much fun.
Yeah.
It's like putting a plastic bag on your head all day. You know, you can breathe, but it gets a bit sticky.
Are you going to, sorry, just quickly, like, are you going to continue with acting, or do you think you're going to go back to writing, or what direction do you think you're going to go?
Yeah, I mean, I've never really considered myself an actor ever, you know, so so doing Red Dwarf's a real sort of one-off thing for me, and it's kind of almost advanced puppetry, you know, because it's, you're sort of controlling someone else, effectively. It's not me on the screen, it's someone else, so I like that, you know, that appeals to me. So I don't really do any other acting. I do a lot of other TV, like, presenting work, which I enjoy doing, but I'm, you know, I'm trying to kind of aim it specifically to the stuff I'm genuinely interested in, and I'm sort of saying no to, like, sort of generic TV jobs, which after a long time you kind of get offered just because you've done it a long time and they know you can do it, so they ask you to do all sorts of weird, and I just go, I'm not interested in that, you know, I don't want to do, and I don't want to do, you know, celebrity in the jungle stuff, all that
dancing.
Oh, God, dancing,
celebrity in the jungle,
oh, so, yeah, dancing. If I could do nude in the jungle celebrity dancing, I'd do it, but anyway.
To put on the costume.
But then I'd have to wear a rubber head. I mean, there's no point.
Get voted off the island.
Yeah. So writing is what I really am aiming to do. You know.
What is it?
It's a banana.
No, it isn't. Try again. What is it?
It's a banana.
No, it isn't. What is it?
It's an. It's an.
It's an orange. Go on, say it. It's an orange. This is an orange.
It's an. It's an. It's a banana. It's no good, sir. I just can't do it.
You can do it. I'm going to teach you how. Okay, what's this?
It's an app.
No, no, no. What is it?
Oh, it's no good, sir. I just can't lie. I'm programmed always to tell the truth.
It's easy. Look, an orange, a melon, a female aardvark.
Oh, that is just so superb, sir. How do you do that? Especially calling a banana an aardvark. An aardvark isn't even a fruit. It's total genius.
Let's start again.
Oh, sir, my head is spinning. We've been doing this all morning.
Frightened? I'm going to teach you how to lie and cheat if it's the last thing I do. I'm going to teach you to be unpleasant, cruel, and sarcastic. It's the only way to break your programming, man. Make you independent.
And I'm truly grateful, sir. Don't you think I'd love to be deceitful, unpleasant, and offensive? Those are the human qualities I admire the most. But I just can't do it.
You can.
I can't.
Look, what's this?
No.
What is it?
Please.
Come on, what is it?
It's a small off-duty Czechoslovakian traffic warden.
Yes, you did it, you did it. What's this?
It's a red and blue striped golfing umbrella.
Yes, what's this?
It's an apple.
No,
what is it? It's the Bolivian Navy on maneuvers in the South Pacific.
Well, Crichton, man, you can do it.
No, I can't.
Yes, you... Oh, nice one.
Well, I can't hang around here. I better go away and take the penguin for a walk. I can do it. I did it again. I can lie.
Come here. Come here. Check this.
What?
Concentrate, Crichton. What's this?
It's a banana.
What's this?
It's an orange.
What's this? You taught him that? That's terrific! You two should audition for What's My Fruit? I did it wrong, man. Oh, it gets better!
I just can't do it.
You can, you just did it.
I just can't do it, not when there's someone else there. What's a suitable human analogy? It's like trying to urinate in a public lavatory when you're standing next to a man 2 foot taller than you. It's just not possible.
What are you trying to do exactly?
He's trying to teach me how to lie, sir.
Any particular reason?
Yeah.
Lying's a vital part of your psychological defense system. You're naked without it. If you can't lie, then you can't conceal your true intentions from other people. Sometimes that's essential. I mean, like, take Nelson. When he put the telescope up to his blind eye and said, I see no ships. Or like Humphrey Bogart at the end of Casablanca, where he lies to Victor Laszlo to protect the guy's feelings.
I understand the theory, sir. How many times have you made me watch that movie? I understand that it can be noble to lie. I just can't do it.
You can't. Look, what's this?
It's a banana. It always has been a banana. It always will be a banana. It's a yellow fruit that you unzip and eat the white bits. It's a banana.
You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on 94.9 Joy. I got it wrong. Joy 94.9.
Thank you so
That's
much.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Robert.
Sorry, thank you very much.
You can do it again, quickly.
Joy 94.9.
He already put his voice on. Leave him alone.
I'll leave him alone. Yes, thank you.
The comedy tag. Where's it?
Don't worry, we'll use it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.